This special episode is a Green Party 101 workshop. This workshop discusses the Green Party's policies, history, and structure. This workshop is presented by the Green Socialist Organizing Project's Education Working Group. To learn more or get involved, visit greensocialist.net.
Afternoon, everybody. Sorry, I was running a little late tonight. Had a last-minute emergency at home, but thank you for joining us for our last Green Party 101 of 2023. We started this 101 series in 2022 when we did a recurring cycle of Green Party 101, Eco-Socialism 101, and Organizing 101. We repeated them every 3 months and kind of worked on refining and fine-tuning our workshops. In 2023, we have diversified quite a bit with our 101 series. We've done ones on decentralization. We've done ones on independent politics, on workers' rights, on the Green New Deal, as well as sprinkling in our originals. And you can go to greensocialist.net/101s and find those, you know, past workshops from the last 2 years since we've been doing this series. But as I said, tonight's going to be Green Party 101, talking about the history, the policies, the structure, and how to get involved in the Green Party. Like I said, this is the first one that we did back in 2022, and we're going to actually close out 2023 with our original three. So this month we're going to do Green Party 101 tonight, obviously. Next month we're going to do Eco-Socialism 101. And in December we're going to do Organizing 101. These are usually on the fourth Tuesday. So next month our Eco-Socialism 101 will be on November 28th. In December we're probably going to have to reschedule it because the fourth Tuesday is the day after Christmas. So we probably won't do it that one. But so tonight we're going to talk about Green Party 101. Like I said, my name is Chris Blankenhorn. I'm the Illinois Green Party Secretary, a former national co-chair of the Green Party of the United States, and I served as social media and tech director for the Hawkins-Walker campaign in 2020. That's just a few of the many hats that I wear and I've worn in the Green Party over the years. Like I said, we'll get into the slideshow, a little, but I wanted to open up with kind of talking about the state of the Green Party right now. So if you're new to the Green Party, you may have heard about us when Cornel West said that he was running for president under the Green Party, but a couple weeks ago he switched to independent. That's his second switch since declaring he was running. He started with the Movement for a People's Party and then moved to the Green Party for a couple months, and now he's running as an independent. This campaign gave some reasons why. Some of them were good and legitimate, some of them weren't. A big one I remember seeing was that, you know, he didn't want to run for a nomination. He wants to be coronated. He doesn't want to go through, you know, a democratic process to gain the endorsement of a party, and as an independent, he doesn't have to do that. There was talk about, you know, problems within the party, and the Green Party certainly has its problems, like any large-scale national organization. But, you know, we bring to the table about 20 states, a couple dozen states that we are on the ballot for, that we have ballot access. That means you don't have to petition. That means, you know, in a state like California, the Green candidate will be on the ballot. I think the idea that it's easier to petition and get on the ballot as an independent is one that isn't really based in fact. In states like Illinois, where I'm from, whether you run independent or third party, you have to collect the same number of signatures, so there's no savings there. The problem with running independent, though, is it doesn't carry forward. If you have a really great election and you get recognized, it's only you. It's not a party. So there's no down ballot implications. I think that Ralph Nader in an interview with Politico, You know, I think he summed it up best. The main thing that running independent lets you do, makes easier, is dropping out. And I know that was a concern of a lot of Greens, whether or not Cornell West was going to, you know, actually challenge all the way through. And moving to independent makes it easier for him to not do that. But frankly, none of that matters, right? That's external. That's a campaign thing. They made a decision. They've moved on from the Green Party. So the question for Greens is, what should we be doing? You know, I think we will, you know, we'll still have our democratic process for, you know, nominating our candidate for president. That's going to go ahead. The states will all have their primaries in their, you know, in their own states. Some places like California, it'll be through the state-run ballot in the primary election. Some states were like mine in Illinois, where we're not recognized, we'll run an internal process. But Greens are going to, you know, go through that process of nominating a candidate. but if you've watched our workshops in the past, one thing that you'll probably won't be surprised by is that right now, I think that what Greens really need to be doing is focusing local, right? Whoever we have running for president, whatever that presidential ticket looks like, we can certainly leverage them, right? The presidential elections give us a spotlight that we don't have outside of that cycle. So we should definitely try to leverage that and make sure, but we have to make sure that we're ready to take on any people that, you know, engage in the presidential campaign. We need to really focus on building our locals. One thing that I get asked all the time is, you know, who is going to be the first Green congressperson? And I always, you know, flip that question and say, it's not a who, it's a where. Races, you might be able to win a city council race based on name recognition, based on your reputation and your connections and networks in the community. You might be able to do that based on a person, right? In a smaller market, you might be able to actually win that race. But when it comes to a race like congressional, it's not a question of who, what candidate is going to win. It's a question of what local is organized enough to put together a serious congressional campaign that can compete, right? When we're talking about congressional campaigns, we're talking about larger scale campaigns that you really just can't rely on, you know, one person and their name recognition. It takes a party. It takes an organization. It takes a serious campaign with staff and volunteers that are coordinated to actually do that. So that's where I think we need to be looking as the Green Party, you know, as we, you know, find ourselves presently in a little bit of, you know, kind of uncertainty and turmoil. There was a big surge, you know, when Cornell West announced that he was running Green Party. When he backed off it, you know, and went independent, it really left us, you know, kind of up in the air, and we're not sure what's going on right now. And I'd say, regardless of what's happening with the presidential election, regardless of what's happening with any specific candidate on that level, on the federal level, you know, we really need to focus in on building our locals. You know, we need to focus on mutual aid. We need to focus on education. We need to focus on showing up in the struggles of our community, whatever they may be, right? Because when we're fighting against something like climate change, what it looks like in central Illinois, where I live, is very different from what it looks like in Pittsburgh, which is very different than what it looks like in Chicago, which is very different than what it looks like in LA, and so on and so forth, right? So even though we have these large, and we'll talk about the green values, you know, these large overarching values that guide our vision, what that actually looks like on the ground, you know, how climate struggle or, you know, how struggles against police brutality or, you know, how workers' rights work out is very location specific. So we really need to, you know, if we want to grow the Green Party into a real alternative, if we want to grow the Green Party into some, you know, a party that can elect people to Congress and then beyond, we really have to start organizing local, right? Because the Republicans and Democrats run their elections by throwing money at things, right? Just, this presidential election season is going to see billions of dollars, you know, dumped into kind of hands-off campaigning, right? Social media ads and flyers on your door. If we want to challenge that, we cannot match their money. So we really, really, really need to focus on organizing. We need to really focus on building relationships. We need to really focus on developing organizers in our community. So that's, you know, a few minutes on, you know, where we are as a party, where we are at the moment following, you know, Cornell West's announcement that he's going to be running independent. With that, I guess we will get started with our Green Party 101. Like I said, you can go to greensocialist.net/101s and learn, you know, see past episodes of this workshop, see the different, You know, we'll talk about things like independent politics and decentralization today. When we do so, you will see, you know, you can go and look and find, you know, hour-long workshops just on those topics at that website. So, but without any further ado, let's get started. Green Party 101, an introduction to green politics and the global green movement. just a touch before I dive in. So this slideshow is being worked on right now to be provided to our local green parties as a workshop in a box. I hope to have that out in the next month or so, but this is the like nice polished, you know, version that we're working on. It's based on our previous workshops, you know, culled over the last year and a half of, you know, what worked, what didn't. And so we hope to have that available coming soon so that you can then take this, you know, workshop just like this, edit it to how you need to, and put on this kind of, you know, what is the Green Party type workshop in your community, as an onboarding, you know, event that you could do on a, you know, once or twice a year, quarterly, whatever works for you. So what are we going to talk about tonight? This presentation is divided into four main parts. What does it mean to be green, the green values and program? Where did Greens come from? Brief history of the Green Party. How do we intend to win green political organizing and strategy? And how do I get involved in the Green Party, which will touch on the structure of the Green Party, and then how different ways that you can get involved. So what is the Green vision? What policies do Greens support? First off, it's important to understand that the Green Party is an eco-socialist, anti-capitalist, anti-imperialist political party and activist organization. We'll get into that and activist organization a little bit later and kind of understanding our history. But we are trying to break the mold of, you know, what a political party is in this country. We're trying to push back against the memberless, you know, capitalist parties of the Republicans and Democrats, where people are voters, but they're really not engaged in the party and guiding the party. They are, you know, people who are courted for their vote, and that's pretty much where it ends. You know, even the heavily involved, you know, active members of those parties really are just canvassing for candidates and things like that. So we're trying to break the mold. In some ways we're succeeding, in other ways we're failing, right? We're trying to forge a new path is a very precarious thing. So it's not going to be everything's not going to go according to plan, and there's going to be plenty of a learning curve. But you know, we're a political party and an activist organization. And as a party, as an organization, we're guided by two broad sets of values that are intertwined with each other, the four pillars and the 10 key values. The four pillars are social justice, democracy, peace, and ecology. Those break down further into the 10 key values, which kind of provide a little more detail in terms of what we're talking about with those four broad range pillars. And the 10 key values are grassroots democracy, social justice and equal opportunity, ecological wisdom, peace and nonviolence, decentralization, community-based economics, feminism and gender equality, respect for diversity, personal and global responsibility, and a future focus and sustainability. And when you think about these, right, if I go back to the previous slide, when we talked about the Green Party is an eco-socialist, anti-capitalist, anti-imperialist political party and organization. And when you look at the 10 key values, one thing that, you know, becomes clear, the party has had a long debate about socialism. In 2016, the National Party explicitly adopted an anti-capitalist stance in its platform. And so, you know, that was when it kind of became explicit. But when you look at these 10 key values, one thing you'll notice is that capitalism can't abide by any of them, right? Capitalism is not democratic. By definition, it's a hierarchical system of power. Social justice and equal opportunity are not, you know, outcomes of capitalism. Capitalism, you know, drives division and oppression. Similarly, capitalism is the driving force behind climate change, right? So it's definitely not ecologically wise. And we can go through each one of these, and what we'll find, you know, is that the Green Party, whether explicitly calling itself socialist or not, has been socialist the entire time, right? We have espoused socialist values since our founding, you know, at this point, getting close to 40 years ago. So those are our, you know, the broad strokes of what do Greens believe in. But that, you know, that then leaves the question, okay, but what do you actually believe in? right? So how do green values translate into policy? When you look at our, you know, breaking these down in terms of our four pillars, you know, we can look at ecology. We've got the eco-socialist Green New Deal, which provides 100% clean energy by 2030 in all sectors. That's basically now 2030 is probably out of the reach for that one. But that's a 10-year plan that on a balanced budget that can convert us completely over to renewable energy, clean energy, within 10 years of, you know, getting the program rolling, not just in energy production, but across all sectors, manufacturing and housing and agriculture and all that kind of stuff. Also under ecology, banning fracking, divesting from fossil fuels, green manufacturing, zero waste recycling, regenerative agriculture, reinstating the civilian conservation corps, green public transportation. And during our campaign, Howie said that in 2020, Howie said he would set up an Office of Climate Mobilization to kind of coordinate the pushback against climate change. Under social justice, we've got ending the war on drugs and putting in place anti-discrimination laws, defending reproductive rights, passing the Equality Act, the Equal Rights Amendment, an economic bill of rights like MLK talked about, reparations for African Americans, reparations and honoring treaty rights for Native Americans, closing the detention camps and opening the borders in terms of immigration policy. Looking at democracy, we've got ranked choice voting, abolishing the Electoral College, which in and of itself is an anti-democratic institution, proportional representation, which is the real game changer, ranked choice voting when we're still having first past the post races where the winner takes all and the person who gets 52% beats the person, you know, gets representation, and the 48% who voted for someone else gets nothing out, you know, gets nothing. How we really radically change the power structure in our government is by establishing proportionally representative bodies, so that more voices are added to the mix. Fair ballot access, right? As an Illinoisan, I often say that ranked choice voting doesn't mean anything if you could still only rank Republicans and Democrats, and that's what's true in my state. We implemented ranked choice voting for 2024. That's great. I would support that. But the reality is that with our Illinois' extremely repressive ballot access laws, largely the only people that are going to be able to get on most ballot lines are going to be the Republicans and Democrats, right? For president, the Republicans and Democrats have to collect 3,000 to 5,000 signatures. Third parties and independents have to collect 25,000 signatures, right? So we're collecting more than five times to run for president. And that's in 90 days. And it's even worse for congressional districts. To run in my central Illinois district, you have to run, to run as a Republican or a Democrat, you have to collect about 700 to 800 signatures. To run as an independent or green, you have to collect over 16,000 signatures, right? And you have to double it. So 30,000 signatures in 90 days from a largely rural district. That's going to be really, really hard to accomplish, right? So if we don't have ballot access, equitable ballot access standards is one of the key points in our democracy demands. We're not, you know, we're basically just giving a veneer of legitimacy to a still wholly illegitimate system, right? If third parties have petition requirements that are beyond a reasonable expectation, we can't get on the ballot to be ranked. So we need to keep that in mind when we're talking about ranked choice voting. Similarly with proportional representation, right? Getting rid of first past the post is the real game changer. Getting proportional representation in our legislative bodies is the real game changer. Voting rights for felons, continuing with the democracy section, audible paper ballots, full public campaign finance, ending corporate personhood and DC statehood. When it comes to Puerto Rico and the other territories, the Green Party's position is that those populations should decide what they want to be. If that means statehood, then statehood. If that means independence from the United States, then that means independence. But we, you know, as a party that believes in grassroots democracy, we believe the decision on that should be left to them. In the case of DC, independence isn't really a practical option, and the citizens of DC have consistently asked for statehood. On the peace end of the four pillars, Starting off with a 75% military budget cut, closing our overseas bases, a just transition for soldiers to make sure that as we close, we're transitioning the troops who are being discharged as we demilitarize into, you know, the new green economy, making sure that they have, you know, jobs that are providing stability for their families and that are, you know, promoting the, you know, the shift away from fossil fuels and into a new green eco-socialist economy. We need new nuclear treaties. Right now, we're pulling away from the treaties. We're stepping up the our nuclear modernization under Obama and under Trump. That was pushed pretty hard, modernizing our nuclear arsenal. We need a no first use policy for nukes. We need disarmament, massive disarmament. And that includes ourselves taking the lead and being a world leader on that, but also in, you know, negotiating new treaties that lead to, you know, the goal of, a non-nuclear world. We need to lift sanctions that we have all around the world. We need to support BDS and as part of our for lack of a better term, as part of our reparations to the rest of the world. The United States and our United States-based companies have been a leading driver in climate change. And so we need to be, you know, a big pusher and a big supporter of a global Green New Deal. So that's, you know, a big group of how, you know, how does this actually play out? How do we go from four broad values into concrete policy? And in cases like the Eco-Socialist Green New Deal, if you go to HollyHawkins.us, you can see, you know, a full budget worked out where it talks about how many jobs are created, how much each sector is going to cost, a path towards reaching 100% clean energy within 10 years. Which segues well into, you know, what are green policies? Well, the Green New Deal was born here. The original Green Party formulation of the Green New Deal was crafted in 2010, and called out four main policy areas: economic human rights, a green economic transition, financial reform, and elections reform. In 2010, Howie Hawkins and about 100 other candidates around the United States ran on Green New Deal platforms. That included our gubernatorial slate in Illinois back in 2010, running on a Green New Deal. That's a decade almost before you heard about anything like this from the Democratic Party. In 2012 and 2016, Jill Stein's presidential campaign picked it up. And then in 2020, Howie Hawkins expanded on it further, pulling it from, you know, broad policy platitudes into a concrete policy proposal, broken into an economic bill of rights and a green economy reconstruction program. So this does lead to the question, right? How do Greens differ from progressive Democrats, right? Because the reality is, if we're just a gradation different, right? If we're just a slight percentage to the left of AOC and Bernie, why are we running in the different party? One answer to that is I can, you know, quote AOC herself, who said in any other country, she wouldn't be in the same party as Joe Biden, right? Our two-party system is a major, major problem. And so that's one of the reasons why we run independent, right? We're an independent political party. We don't believe that our, you know, substantive transformative change can come from within our two capitalist parties. So we're, you know, following a long socialist tradition of running independent political campaigns. And again, we're a party and a movement. And we'll get into the movement side when we talk about organizing strategy, but how do we differ? And while some of our policy slogans may seem similar or in some cases straight up lifted, like the Green New Deal, which they took from us and then watered down into basically social welfare capitalism, where they were paying corporations to do better, there are fundamental differences between green policy and that of progressive capitalists. Starting off, system change versus reforming capitalism. You can't have political democracy without economic democracy, right? You can't expect to have true political democracy if you have a repressive and oppressive and exploitative economic system in which the wealthy are provided more power, more access, where a dollar is, you know, allows them to have more vote than someone who doesn't have as much. So you can't have political democracy without economic democracy. Unless we address capitalism, we're not going to get, you know, the real substantive solutions, the real transformation that we need. And the Green Party recognizes that capitalism is by nature exploitative and oppressive, and we advocate for an eco-socialist alternative that centers public ownership and planning and community control. That segues into public ownership versus private profits, right? Most, even the progressive Democrats with the Thrive Agenda, most Democratic climate policy is basically funneling massive amounts of public money, of tax dollars, to corporations to say, pretty please act better, right? We're bribing the corporations to make reforms. And it's a massive money laundering scheme where we're just funneling huge amounts of money into the private sector, into shareholders and CEOs' pockets. And it's not getting passed on to the worker, and it's not getting passed on to our communities. So from climate action to housing to healthcare, green policies center a public and worker ownership, and as opposed to paying corporations to be better and subsidizing the funding for private sector reforms. And then we also call, you know, the other big one is a multi-party democracy versus a two-party oligarchy. Party suppression is voter suppression. When you suppress third parties, independent voices off of the ballot, you're excluding a large portion of the, of the voting, of the potential voter pool. And the hope in doing so, when the Democrats and Republicans do this, the hope is that they can coerce you into voting for them because they're better than the other, which other direction they're talking to you from, right? And so the hope is that by suppressing the Green Party, by suppressing the Libertarian Party, by keeping independent voices off of the ballot, that you'll have to vote for one of them. But the reality is the largest voting bloc most elections is non-voters. Right. And the reason for that isn't apathy. They would, you know, when you listen to mainstream political analysis, they'd like to have you think that people just don't care. But the reality is people don't care because people have seen that the game is rigged. People understand that, you know, when they voted time and time again, when they surged Obama into office, he immediately backtracked on all of his progressive policies. Right. Protecting Roe versus Wade was all of a sudden no longer a priority, despite being a campaign promise. The public option was never on the table when the ACA was being drafted, despite it being a campaign promise, right? And so people are not apathetic. They're alienated. They don't have anyone that speaks to their values. They don't have anyone that's putting forth real solutions. The 2020 campaign was an almost issueless campaign, where Trump just bloviated and Biden said, "I'm not that guy." Right. And so party suppression is voter suppression. By suppressing alternative voices, they're silencing people and they're limiting the options that we have to ones that are acceptable to the capitalist status quo. And true democracy requires a diverse set of political voices to represent our diverse communities. The Green Party calls for a multi-party proportional democracy that empowers rather than a winner-take-all two-party system that encourages the status quo and maintains oligarchy control. There's been all these studies year after year where it seems like every couple of years a major collegiate institution is shocked to learn that the United States is an oligarchy. But if you look at it, we have been from the beginning. Right. When you get past the platitudes and the pretty words at the beginning of our founding documents, what you find is that is a constitution and a government created by oligarchs for oligarchs. Some of our earliest presidents were also some of our wealthiest presidents when you adjust their incomes to modern standards. And so the two-party system is a by design thing, right? Our government was created to support capital, and this is how you best support capital. If we want to break from that, we really need a diverse multi-party democracy. It will empower our social sphere and our activity in our communities and give us the potential to, you know, realize real change instead of continuing to vote for lesser evils. So that's what we believe, but how did we come to be? Like I said before, the Green Party is an activist organization and an electoral party, right? That last section really focused in on our electoral policies, right? On the program that we run on when we run for office. But the reality is that ties into movements and communities too. The early green movement from the 1980s and through the 2000s, it was built on the energies of the civil rights, feminist, environmental, and peace movements from the 1950s to 1970s. And it was a conversation that happened regularly in these movements. Where are we putting our voice? Are we funneling into the Democratic Party and trying to, coerce, twist their arm enough that we get better appeasements from them? Or are we trying to have, or should we be trying to build an independent voice for the working class, for our movement? And various movements and parties have started and down that independent direction and have had various levels of success, though most have either folded or been absorbed into the Democratic Party. So that led into the 1980s. And in 1984, a group of Greens met in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and formed what was called the Green Committees of Correspondence. Going back to that, we're both a activist organization and an electoral party. At that original meeting in 1984, people weren't necessarily there. There was no Green Party of Illinois, right? There's no Illinois Green Party. So there was no one there representing the Illinois Green Party. People were there representing movements. And so Howie Hawkins, our 2020 presidential nominee, was one of the co-founders of the Green Party. And he was at that 1984 meeting as a representative of the Clamshell Alliance, which was an anti-nuclear organized community movement, right? They put on huge sit-ins and huge protests outside the Seabrook nuclear plant and were heavily influential in derailing U.S. nuclear policy. And Howie was there as a representative and a founder of the Clamshell Alliance, not as a Green from the state of New York or Vermont or, any other state. So that was 1984, that was the Green Committees of Correspondence were formed. In 1991, the Greens, or the Green Party USA, was first formed. That's our first foray into officially being an electoral party. You can Google 1991 Green Party formation C-SPAN, and you can actually go back and watch it. And I recommend you do, because what you'll see is you'll see some people sitting on stage talking about issues, and you could transplant them to today. And in many ways, that their issues are still very, very relevant, right? The need for a Green Party, the need for an independent left, power in this country was just as true back in the 1980s and 90s when the Greens were forming, as it still is today. In 1996, But the Green Party USA is still largely focused on education and organizing, despite officially becoming a national party. In 1996, the Association of State Green Parties was created as a separate party. The party split, and it was created to support the Nader-Leduc campaign for president. So in 91, we formed our first party. In 96, we split. In 2000, the ASGP and the GPUSA came back together. So we split and mostly came back together. And in 2000, when the Green Party of the United States was formed. And that is the political party that exists today. It's the same entity has been in operation since that formation 23 years ago. Since then, our presidential campaign have been Nader and Kameo in 2000, Cobb LaMarche in 2004, which was a very, 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 we could do a whole hour on 2004 and the fights that went on. Nader decided to run independent and not as a Green. And so we had a contested convention. While we nominated Cobb and LaMarche, a large number of Greens maintained their support for the independent Nader campaign. So that was a very transitional time in the party. In 2008, we ran Cynthia McKinney and Rosa Clemente. In 2012, Jill Stein and Sherry Hunkala. 2016, Jill Stein and Ajamu Baraka. And then 2020, Holly Hawkins and Angela Walker. If you're just joining us now and you're like, what's happening in 2024, you can go back to the beginning of this when we're done. And I talked for about 5 minutes about the current state of the Green Party, given recent news that we've had about, you know, regarding our presidential primary and where we're at and where we should be focused. But that's the presidential side, right? People always say Greens only show up and run for president, but that's just not true. We've elected over 1,300 people since we formed in 2000. Mostly are state and most were local and a few at the state level. We've currently got over 100 Greens in office around the country. In my state, we have a Green mayor in Galesburg, Illinois. We have ballot access in numerous states. 2020 was really hard. Trying to petition during COVID was not an easy thing. So that we saw our low, but we've had it up to as many as 47 states. Some notable, but again, that's very electoral, which makes sense because it's a, we're talking about the party, but when in power, Greens have made some huge, huge moves. And when not in power, Greens have still been huge, players in their communities. One example is Jason West. He was the former Green mayor of New Plots, New York. And he was the first person to, officiate same-sex marriages before in New York, and he did this before it was legal. At the time, it was illegal for same-sex couples to get married in New York. As mayor, he could officiate weddings, and he officiated gay marriages before it was legal and really, really, really thrust that issue up into the forefront. Gail McLaughlin is a former Green mayor of Richmond, California. She made some huge changes in their police department, implementing a community control of the police system, similar kind of model than inspired by what the Black Panthers ran on. She also, in a really, really cool thing, she used eminent domain to protect, to prevent evictions during the 2008 housing crisis. And so in Richmond, when people were being evicted by their banks during the housing crisis, she would, the government would actually use eminent domain to take over the home and prevent the eviction and keep the people in their home. Reverend Edward Pinkey was a Green community organizer in Michigan, and he fought he fought hard against Whirlpool, which is the the appliance manufacturer, and but they had a huge, huge, huge amount of influence in his local community. They were getting engaged in tax evasion, getting unfair tax breaks, and really had control of the local government. And Reverend Pinkey was a big part of the movement in pushing back and getting change there. Sherry Hancala, who was our 2012 Green vice presidential candidate, is a homelessness advocate in Philadelphia and founded the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign decades ago. Sherry's been causing trouble in Philadelphia for a long, long, long time. A few years ago, she ran for state representative and openly said that her, her offices in the Capitol and in her district would be homeless shelters, that they would take in undocumented workers and protect them from eviction. This was during the Trump, deportation and arrest. And this was during the Trump administration. So Sherry's been doing great work, and presently they've been doing trainings on how to do, sit-ins and stuff to stop eviction. Jill Stein, who was our 2016 presidential candidate, won lawsuits forcing the Pennsylvania government to adopt auditable paper ballots and forcing Wisconsin to open up their election machines for inspection. So this is what, when people ask why did Greens file for a recount in 2016, this is why. In Pennsylvania, before 2016, through 2016, there weren't auditable ballots. When you cast your ballot, you had no way of verifying that what you said was actually recorded as your vote. There was no receipt given. There was no trackability. And that can be done anonymously where you're not, violating the sanctity of an anonymous vote, but you can still say, okay, yes, mine is right. That didn't exist until that 2016 recount, when the state of Pennsylvania implemented it as a result of the recount, because when we asked to recount, they said, we can't, right? We can't verify these ballots. There's no way to audit them. Similarly, in Wisconsin, the policy was they weren't going to open up there and inspect their machines. Whether or not there's something wrong with the machines, right, which has been totally blown out by, you know, that's one problem of Trump and, you know, his ilk really milking the, you know, the, we, our democracy is broken line. Is our democracy is broken. It's just not broken the way they think it is, right? They want it broken the way that it's broken now. They just are mad that they lost. But the reality is we don't have a democracy in this country. We don't have transparency in our elections, and that recount in 2016, you know, showed that by forcing Pennsylvania to now have auditable paper ballots, and now Wisconsin has policies that allow for their machines to be inspected. Because, yeah, whether the machines are broken or not, you still need to be able to inspect them and make sure that that's true, and it should be part of a robust and transparent electoral system, where after elections you are actually inspecting them, right? You're auditing them. You're not just assuming that everything went okay, but you're providing concrete proof that it did. And we probably would be in a whole lot better, you know, situation in this country in terms of our rhetoric around democracy, if we did something like that, rather than you know, kind of leaving it all up to bad actors to spin things on social media. So we're an activist party. We're an activist and electoral party, right? We've talked about our policies. We've talked about how we came to be. So what do we think? How do we think we should organize? How do we think that, you know, we should bring these visions into, you know, reality? And so a couple of thoughts on the independence of the importance of an independent party. This is from Karl Marx. Even when there is no prospect whatsoever of their being elected, the workers must put up their own candidates in order to preserve their independence, to count their forces, and to bring before the public their revolutionary attitude and party standpoint. In this connection, they must not allow themselves to be seduced by such arguments of the Democrats as, for example, that by doing so they are splitting the Democratic Party and making it possible for the reactionaries to win. The ultimate intention of all such phrases is to dupe the proletariat, right? So going all the way back to Marx, right, we're an eco-socialist party, we're from a bottom left orientation generally, but, you know, there's a good amount of influence from Marx. And thinking about, you know, going all the way back to Marx, Marx believed that workers should run independent of the capitalist parties, that we should put up our own parties even if we're losing, right? That we should put up our own candidates even if we get our ass kicked. And we should do it because this allows us to count our numbers, right? To give a tangible way that people can show up and support us. But more importantly, it allows us to bring our ideas forward, to make a case for things, right? You can look at the governor race in New York in 2018 when Cuomo had to move, right? Cuomo thought he was going to run away and the Greens all of a sudden are surging. All of a sudden the Democrats put a $15 minimum wage on the table, which was a Green policy and a major Green talking point. All of a sudden the Democrats put a fracking ban on the table, right? These weren't on the table before the gubernatorial election happened and the Democrats realized we're losing people. Right, they realized that the Greens were gaining because we were putting forward popular ideas, and so that's a big part of it, is that we need to run independent so we can put our ideas out there, so we can test our strategies, so we can test our policies, our rhetoric, our slogans, and we can fine tune our work. Another short one from Eugene Debs: I'd rather vote for something I want and not get it than vote for something I don't want and get it. That quote is extremely, extremely applicable to our modern political system, right? Even though it's over a century old. I often talk about our voting system in you know, modern America as a negative voting culture. Most people are voting against things. They don't like Joe Biden. They don't like Donald Trump, but they don't like the things that they're being riled up against about on the other side even more. We've long stopped voting for the things we want. We've stopped having positive aspirational voting. We've stopped campaigning that way. Campaigns have devolved into, you know, negative message and hype based operations rather than,
you know, organizing opportunities to change hearts and minds and to, you know, get people moving in the same direction. And then a final one, the Green Party is no longer the alternative. It is the imperative. You know, we're driving off the cliff. We're under, you know, we're well under a decade on the climate clock. We don't have time to wait for the Democrats to realize what, you know, that they're complicit and to shift course. It is imperative that we forge a new path, and forging a new path tends to require an independent actor or an independent body, not waiting and waiting around, sitting on our hands and waiting for those that got us in this mess to solve the problem for us. So independent politics is a key part of the Green strategy, right? Greens firmly believe that we have to put up independent candidates, right? We cannot be sucked into lesser evil voting of the capitalist parties. But the debate has been going on the entire time the party has existed of how to best do this. We have our different perspectives, but largely we agree on a mix of a few key tactics. We need to organize in our communities around local issues, supporting local unions and local movements. Right, like I said earlier, what it looks like to fight it, you know, struggle against climate change is different depending on where you live. So, when, you know, if you're in my town and you want to be involved in this fight, you know, you're going to be keyed in on Hunter Lake. You're going to be keyed in on the victory that we just had across the entire Midwest when the Navigator CO2 pipeline just got shut down, right? That was something that was being struggled against in my local community, and had been successfully pushed back against to the point that the company canceled the whole pipeline, right? And it wasn't just us. It was that they'd been having problems everywhere. So what it looks like, right? If you're in Chicago, you're going to be talking more about, or Pittsburgh, you might be talking about more about coal ash and coke pits, right? Out of the steel and coal industries. But where you live, you really need, that's where you need to tie in, right? Going and spouting off platform points about a national agenda is not a way to get people to move to your cause. They might agree with you, but what are you doing here? What are you doing locally? So we really need to make sure as Greens that we're organizing actively in our local community, that we're engaged in our local struggles, that we're showing up and letting it be known the Green Party is with you. So then when we run, right, when somebody runs for city council or county board a year down the line, the people who were involved in that struggle with know you. They get, hey, I'll vote for that person. They came in and they were standing next to us when we were fighting. So you know, that then now they have the trust, the relationship, and they have the trust to actually support us and to become involved and help grow the green movement. So like I said at the beginning, and like you'll hear throughout all of our 101 workshops and most of the workshops we do, right, local organizing is key. I got asked on one of these workshops one time, where should I start? And I said, your neighbor. And then the neighbor on the other side. And then the people on the other side, right? You start in your local community, and it's not about dropping a flyer and walking away. It's about multiple conversations, right? It's called deep canvassing, or relational organizing, if you want to learn more about it. We have workshops where we talk more about it, but you know, that's the key. It's not just one, hey, come out to this event. It's having the conversation over and over. Your job as a socialist organizer is to help connect the problems that people see in their community to the systemic, you know, causes underneath. So, you know, in my community, one thing I often talk about is when someone talks about how our infrastructure sucks, I ask them if they're aware of the breakdown of our city budget. Because if you look at our city budget, what you'll find is that almost every year, the police department and public works ask for the same amount, give or take, every year. Identical amounts, identical budget requests. The police department gets 99% of their budget and public works gets 30% of our budget. Our roads suck because we're investing in authoritative policing policies, right? We're investing in police over roads. And that is an active choice that's being made by everybody, you know, both parties on our city council. So, you know, that's something that people, you know, as a socialist organizer, it's an agitation point. Right. When someone's like, man, you know, the potholes are terrible around here. Well, here's why. You know, here's one of the reasons why. Here's why we talk about defunding the police. And we can now we can start connecting those slogans, those national level programs, you know, down into how they impact people's day-to-day lives. Because as Greens, we've got to deal in bread and butter issues. We've got to deal with kitchen table issues. We've got to deal and organize around the things that are actually impacting the working class. Because more than, you know, overwhelmingly, the working class is staying home, right? And activating them is the key to, you know, growing a third party, is capturing that largest voting block every single election. We need to create new and independent community institutions for mutual aid and grassroots democracy. You know, whether that be mutual aid programs or, you know, setting up community assemblies. But we need to focus our energies locally. We need to focus power locally. Kind of on this point, Martin Zier says no feds, bioregional democracy, regional long-term resources. We talked about closing bases and stuff. In general, that's exactly how the Greens want to organize society. A little caveat, though, is that we do still often have federal programs, something like Medicare for All. You really leverage the economy of scale and standardize, you know, and ensure quality care by having a federal system. The key is that not having a top-down federal system like we have now, where Congress appropriates a certain amount of money and everyone local can fight over it, but have a bottom-up structure where community-controlled health boards that are a mix of community members and employees of the the health system get together, and various experts and whatnot get together, and they determine what they need for their community, and it's up to the legislators to pass a budget to fund it. So yes, absolutely. We Greens very much believe in bottom up democratic control. We need to support these community goals with municipal electoral campaigns, right? I said earlier, when we engage in these movements in our community, when we show up, when we put our skin in the game, when we go shoulder to shoulder with people on their struggles, that can work in a couple different ways in supporting our, and supporting our candidates. And that is, one, like I said earlier, a year later, if I run for the county board and they know me, there's way higher chance that someone's going to vote for me, right? If I had shown up because I was at that environmental rally, I was at that Black Lives Matter rally, right? I was at that reproductive rights rally, and I was organizing and working with the people, trying to achieve change in my community. When I run, I'm going to have that respect. I'm going to have those relationships that'll get me votes a lot easier than cold knocking doors, which is generally what the Republicans and Democrats do. But the other way that supporting community goals and interlinking that with the municipal electoral campaigns is that's where you're going to find the people who should be running, right? When you're in that movement and you're like, whew, you need to be on city council, right? The Green Party can be the vehicle for that, right? The person that gets told who you should be on city council may not have a chance within the mainstream parties because they don't play the game or they don't fit the mold or whatever. But the Green Party can be a vehicle for that. We need to utilize those national campaigns when the visibility happens. But like I'd said at the beginning and throughout this, local organizing is the key, right? It's not going to be one person that's the first Green president because they're so charismatic. It's not going to be one person that's so charismatic that they won a congressional seat. It's going to be what local chapter, what regional chapter, what state chapter is organized enough, has the infrastructure, the volunteers, and can turn people out to vote to win an election on that scale. And so we've got to start at the bottom. We've got to work in our local communities to elect thousands to local office. Once we've got that, then we're going to start seeing, you know, people being elected to state houses, people being elected to state senate, people being elected to Congress. But we've got to start and build that foundation at the bottom if we want that foundation to be strong enough to, you know, lift us to those higher levels. An important thing to understand when you're engaging, with the Green Party is that states have unique organizing conditions, and it's important to understand that this is by design, right? We have 50 different electoral systems in this country. Every state has a different electoral system. Every territory where they get to vote for it federally but don't get representation federally, like D.C., Puerto Rico, Guam, all of these places have different rules. And it's that way on purpose, right? Because it makes it really hard to build a formidable opposition, because you essentially have to have 51 parties that are operating, you know, within their own environment. It makes it very, and that, again, this is intentional. This is a way of keeping the status quo. This is a way of keeping the big money capitalist parties in power. Some of the unique organizing conditions are ballot access. Ballot access is the process by which candidate or party gets on the ballot. The required, like I said, it varies from state to state and race to race. One of the easiest in the country is Vermont. And in Vermont, in an odd year like 2023, you have to hold 10 caucus meetings in different towns throughout Vermont. Those caucuses need to elect local leadership. And then you have a minor party and you have ballot access through the next election. 10 meetings, that's all you got to do. In a state like Illinois, like I said earlier, where I am, it takes us 25,000 signatures to get a presidential candidate on the ballot, double that to get to survive challenges. And to run for Congress, it takes about 15,000 from within one rural district where I live in 90 days, compared to 700 or 800, right? So some states we have a really hard time getting on the ballot. In New York, during COVID, the Democrats passed a law that made it three times harder for third parties than independents. And they did that after Greens had their most successful year ever in 2018, or their successful gubernatorial run ever in 2018. So amongst the chaos of COVID, they snuck in a bill that requires them to collect, I believe it's 45,000 signatures in 42 days. The hardest in the country. There's states like Arizona where it takes 40,000 signatures to get on the ballot for a statewide race. And often these statewide races are how we get on the ballot. And so when I say in Illinois, Republicans and Democrats collect 700 to 800 and I collect 15,000, I can get to 700 to 800 by getting on the ballot and getting over 5%. So they keep me off the ballot in the first place. Another different organizing condition is green registration. Just with recognition and ballot access, whether or not a green can someone can register green in their state depends on laws and requirements of each state. And so I've often in the past I've been asked to prove that I was a green, and my state doesn't have partisan registration. In fact, I believe there's over 20 states that don't allow you to register with a political party, which means that we don't know who the Greens in Illinois are. We know who we know, right? But in California, they have over 100,000 registered Greens, because all you have to do is check a box that says Green Party when you register. And so that gives them a massive number of potential voters that they can then lobby and access and leverage. And in states like Illinois, we don't have that. Everybody is at the same. Basically, there's no partisan registration, and so we have to start from the ground up rather than having that boost of having a green box on the ballot or on the registration form. And then something I realized a few years ago, I was talking to a green city councilor in Amsterdam, and she said, "I can be anywhere in my country in 2 hours in public transit." And it made me realize I can't be out of my state in 2 hours in public transit. And public transit on its own is not going to get me very far, especially living in a downstate rural area. There is an Amtrak that comes through so I could jump on public transit, but if there wasn't, I'd be stuck here. And so we are organizing at a continental level, right? In addition to the complexity of building a national movement or party with a wide range of conditions and rules like we just talked about, we have to engage in organizing on a continental scale. And that presents its own challenges, as different regions and different populations will have potentially divergent priorities, and even common issues will manifest themselves in different ways, right? What it means, the impact of demilitarization hits San Diego way different than it hits small town Iowa, right? The impact of full stop on oil and gas hits Texas or the Bakken oil fields much harder than it hits some, you know, hits us in central Illinois where we don't have much of an oil industry, right? So in addition to having all these different, you know, the rules changing depending on where you're at, the conditions change. And it, I cannot emphasize enough how much more difficult continental level organizing makes things when you're trying to form a national organization. And I feel like every time I talk about it, I realize even more ways why it makes things nearly impossible. But with that said, some organizing affirmations, right, for people who watch this and want to get involved and start their own local Green Party. No one needs permission to begin organizing in their communities. You, yes, you can do it, right? Like I said, start by talking to your neighbor. Start by thinking, who of the people I know in my community care about the issues I care about? And then start a conversation. You don't have to start with, will you join the Green Party? Will you pay dues to be a member of the Green Party? Will you run for office as a Green? Start slow. Start with conversation. Start with building relationships, feeling things out, and figuring out what your best next step is going to be. Because your best next step is going to be way different if you're in Seattle, than if you're in Florida. So you really got to, no one has to give you permission, right? You can do this. And we believe in you. That's how it happens. That's how we build a bottom-up grassroots party. Good organizing, like I've said, is built first and foremost on trust and real relationships. Working class people rightfully don't trust politicians. Actions, not words, are what matter. Don't let yourself get overwhelmed. Start with one or two things, right? The world is a flaming dumpster fire, and so much of it is urgent. And urgent doesn't even accurately convey how desperate things are for a lot of people on a lot of issues, right? So as Greens, we're passionate people, and we often kind of think we need to save the world all at once. And that leads us to fail, that leads us to overstretch, that leads us to burn out. So start with one or two things at once. Don't let yourself get overwhelmed. Slow roll into it. Figure out what's right for you, what's right for your group, what's right for your community in terms of next steps. Don't think you've got to start, at running someone for Congress. Make sure you do the prep work and planning. If you're always shooting from the hip, it's hard to be effective. Decide on measures and metrics to determine if the action was successful. This is a major party Greens run into. They kind of feel like somebody's got to run, somebody's got to organize a protest, right? We just got to do it. Somebody's got to do it. But when you're doing that, you're not organizing effectively. When it's always somebody's got to do it, you're not slowing down, you're not planning, you're not strategizing, you're not formulating how this action feeds into the next action and how all of these actions feed in to building an independent alternative power, right? It's really hard, but I really encourage all Greens, especially right now when we're in kind of a national level turmoil, take a step back, analyze your work, analyze what you're doing in your community, analyze the issues in your community, see who your networks are, power map, do all these kind of things that you can do in your local organizing, but take a beat, take a breath, try to step away from the somebody's got to do it mentality and, really... think about your next steps so that you can move forward effectively. We can't always shoot from the hip, or we're just never going to be successful. There's no one method to organize. Learn and adapt ideas from others. Do what makes sense for you, your community, and your goals, right? If you see a great idea from someone, see if you can do it, right? But you may need to tweak it a little. I remember a few years ago, there was a DSA chapter that replaced people's headlights. And I saw all these people try to replicate it around the country. But the reality was, and we had this conversation in my local community, and we ended up not doing it because what we realized was we didn't necessarily have someone with the skill set. We could each change our own headlights. We could each YouTube and figure out how to change a headlight. But we didn't have, a mechanic in the crew that could quickly and efficiently change lots of different headlight setups. You need to adapt it. You need to take that inspiration and see what your skill set is and how you can pay out, how you can, kind of leverage that into your organizing. And then there are very few resources on independent political organizing. Most organizing resources are oriented towards not-for-profits or advocacy groups, or in mainstream capitalist Democratic Party politics. So don't be afraid to try new things. Don't be afraid to ask for help. Don't be afraid to fail. Right? We learn, as long as we learn from a failure, it's not a failure, it's a stepping stone. So to close off, how is the Green Party organized and how do I get involved? The Green Party structure is guided by our values, right? You've heard a lot about grassroots organizing. You've heard a lot about bottom up in the last hour. So the Green Party values of grassroots participatory democracy and decentralization influence our structure. This is for better or worse. We have a whole hour long episode if you go to greensocialist.net/101s, where we talk about decentralization as a theory, decentralization in practice in the Green Party, and kind of dive deep into that one topic. But that said, we have a decentralized national structure that we do this in order to empower local and state parties to act autonomously, as long as they're in line with green values. This allows our local organizers to tailor their focus and strategies and messaging to local conditions and issues. Our national party is a federation of state parties and caucuses. So if you have someone, if you hear someone say, I'm a member of the Green Party of the United States, no, they're not. They might be a donor, they might be a supporter, they might be a volunteer, but they're not a member. The only members of the Green Party of the national state are our state parties and caucuses. We're a confederation system. So each one of those, each state elects delegates to serve on our national committee, and then they guide the politics of the national party. And then the national committee elects our steering committee, which is our day-to-day operations leadership. The national identity caucuses are, in the Green Party, caucus has a different meaning than it does other places. For us, it's a very narrow meaning of historically oppressed groups can form identity caucuses. And they are recognized as equal to state parties, and they tend to center around key values like feminism, gender identity, and diversity. State and caucuses elect delegates to serve on the national committee, and the national committee elects the steering committee. And you can kind of see this here in this flow chart, where we've got state delegates from state parties and delegates from our identity caucuses are democratically elected. They serve in the national committee. We have standing committees like ballot access committee, fundraising committee, merchandise committee, and members from state parties are appointed to those. Similarly, with international delegates representing us on the international level with the Global Greens. And then I had mentioned our identity caucuses. We have five right now: the Black Caucus, the Women's Caucus, the Latinx Caucus, the LGBTQIA Caucus, which is called the Lavender Greens, and then the Youth Caucus, which is called the Young Eco-Socialists. So that's how we're structured. When it comes to getting involved with the Green Party, I always recommend start local, right? If you don't have a local chapter, check out your state party, reach out to your state party. You can sign up with the national party and it'll get forward through to your state, but try to connect with that state party. They're who can appoint you to, you know, the merchandise committee if you're really into making t-shirts, or the ballot access committee if you want to help with ballot access. That your state party is who appoints you. But start at the most local level. If you're a member of any of the identity groups that we have caucuses for, definitely join those. And they can get you involved in the national level politics as well. If you want to get involved in the Green Party, start as low as you can. Is there a local Green Party? No. Is there a state Green Party? In almost every state, the answer for that is yes. If not, we can, you know, you can contact the national party and we'll get you involved in helping to found one. But yeah, starting at the bottom, because that's where the real work needs to be done. And then, you know, as your involvement and your interests and all of that, become more clear, you can get appointed to the different national level things. That That said, you can also come work with us at the Green Socialist Organizing Project. We were founded out of the 2020 campaign. And we have a few main goals: political education, which this is part of, party building, elections and campaigns, and issues campaigns. And so if you want to, you know, if you said, okay, I want to become in the Green Party, and you look and you find out that, oh, I don't really have much of a Green Party, like it's pretty defunct in my neighbor, in my community, or there is none, go to greensocialist.net. And we have workshops on how to start a Green Party from scratch. We have workshops on how to revitalize a Green Party that's kind of gone, kind of slowed down. And that's the truth is, 2020 was really hard on the Green Party, right? We're a grassroots party that relies on active engagement with our communities to grow. And COVID really restricted our ability to do that. Trump in 2020, the anyone but Trump sentiment was worse than anybody had faced. During the 2020 campaign, Ralph Nader told us it was worse than 2004. Jill Stein and Jaume Baraka told us it was worse than 2016. The blackout on the media that we saw was immense. Coming out of it, we were really focused on how do we recover from this, right? We in the 2020 campaign, we really saw the Green Party stagnated. The party had a really hard time surviving. And as such, we formed the Green Socialist Organizing Project to put on workshops like this, to put on resources. You know, if you go to our website in the organized section, you can find things on how to run a meeting. If you're the meetings in your local are really, really, you know, chaotic, we've got guides on how to run a meeting. We've got you, if you want to sell merchandise, we've got guides on how to do that. We've got guides on how to talk to your local media, how to get them to show up and what to do if they don't. And so after the 2020 election, we formed the Green Socialist Organizing Project. And our goal was to provide as many resources as we can to allow Greens to better organize in their local communities. So with that, thank you very much, everybody. Have a good night. And if you want to get involved with us at the Green Socialist Organizing Project, you can sign up at greensocialist.net. And we'll see you next month for Eco-Socialism 101. Have a good one. We got